Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We're in our 7 o'clock hour of the morning shift, and it is brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. So, Atlanta Falcons making the decision with Coach Raheem Morris to part ways with defensive coordinator Jimmy Lake and defensive line coach Jay Rogers. And through a statement through the team, Morris had this to say: after a thorough evaluation of the season and with careful consideration for our team's future, we deem these moves necessary. These decisions are never easy from the human side of things, and we wish Jimmy, Jay, and their families the best. So now that this has happened, the next question is, what is next for the Falcons defense? So who's going to lead the way on that? And talking to Mike during the break and throwing around some candidates, you know, I said Steve Wilks is a guy that's out there who had a proven defense in San Francisco, did a great job with the Panthers for their run. That was like the 2015, the Ron Rivera era.
Credited with keeping, right, that place afloat. Yeah.
And took over as the interim head coach there. And then more recently, he did have a stint with Mizzou. That was a couple of years ago. But most recently, though, I think he was with the Browns for a little bit.
Yeah.
As an assistant. But again,
Wilkes ran the Niners the first season, the defense the first season. Was it Salah or D'Amico?
No, it was after D'Amico left. Yeah, D'Amico. It was 2 years ago.
It was after D'Amico. Their numbers were actually, I think, better.
That's a weird,
and then it was a weird parting of ways.
You know what I think that was, Tiff? I think from everything I've read and kind of read up on the Steve Wilks Shanahan situation, like Shanahan, like they want to establish a defense that they ran in San Fran, so that, you know, when coordinators left, because they had dealt with it before, they didn't want to keep having turnover in scheme and system. So it was like, hey, we want you to come in and be the coordinator, but we want you to run what we do. And it just, I don't think there was a good fit with Steve Wilks. And he was like, I want to do what I do. They wanted him to do something else, and it ended up being a part in a way at the end of the season. But to your point, the statistics say that he was, you know, just as good as D'Amico Ryans, if not better, in that role. And they've always had good players defensively. Okay. So, yeah, I think he's a great candidate. I hadn't kicked that around a little bit until you brought it up just a minute ago. I've seen his name mentioned a little bit in some of these defense coordinator opens.
Well, he's been spotted. He's been around the team. He was around the team a lot this season. I know in camp, I think he was spotted one of the last few weeks of the regular season just being there. So that also, you know, adds more fuel to that fire,
yeah,
of him being a real candidate for the position.
I think the easiest candidate to try to, you know, if you're connecting the dots right now, the easiest candidate is Jeff Ulbrich, right? I mean, he was a coordinator when Raheem was the interim a few years back. You know, when Raheem did not get the job here and obviously did a decent job. And, you know, I was reading a stat a minute ago about him, and he's had, you know, three top five defenses and whatever stint is as a defensive coordinator. The Falcons haven't had a top five defense, I don't think, ever. Like, literally. They haven't had a top 10 defense, and I think it's like 40 years or something. So it's crazy. Like, the numbers are crazy the way they match up.
17 was the best defense they've had in recent memory, and that was a top 10 defense. That was the best defense Matt Ryan ever had. That was probably what made that losing to the Eagles that year. And they were the one team in the playoffs.
I had that game.
The Falcons have three top 10 finishes in total defense in the last 45 seasons. They've never cracked the top five in that span.
What years were? Do you have the years with that or no?
No, I don't have.
Okay,
let's see.
Just out of curiosity,
but
we can come back to that if it's not readily accessible.
That was what was the hardest part. Is you went to LA that year in the divisional, you beat a high powered offense. That was Sean McVay's first year there. Then you go to Philly, and you're the only team to really shut down that offense in that playoff stretch where they won the Super Bowl. I think they only scored I think the score was like 22-17 or something in that game, or maybe it was 17-15 or something like that. I have to go back and remember, but that was the best defense that they had ever under Matt Ryan.
I got the three right here. You ready? 2017, 2012, 2002. Those are your top 10 defenses for the Falcons. Which, like I said, I think the easy thing to do is look at Jeff Ulbrich, the situation he's in. But I asked Tiff this, and one of the reasons it came up during the break, I was like, if you were a defensive coordinator and you've been a head coach, right, you've kind of been doing your own thing, do you come to a situation, and let's just use Steve Wilkes as an example, because of what happened in San Francisco, do you come to a situation where you're going to essentially run what Raheem Morris wants you to run, or do you find an offensive-minded head coach, you know, be it, let's just say Cliff Kingsbury got hired in New Orleans, or are you going to go there where you can run the show and essentially be your own head coach of the defense? I don't know the answer to that. Jeff Ulbrich's the name that comes up when you say that, because Jeff Ulbrich and Raheem have worked together before and they know each other's defenses. So I don't know if that's a good thing, though, I guess is my point. Do you want somebody that's been with Raheem before, or do you want somebody that's completely foreign to the scheme and will bring in a new set of eyes?
The thing I would say is, and we talked about this, is just that if you have a guy that's available and has a proven track record of doing things his way, like a Robert Saleh, like a Steve Wilkes, I say you hand over the keys to those guys. I wouldn't take issue with that. And I'm not going to sit here and act like based on what I know about Raheem Morris, I feel like it would be a collaborative effort, or I feel like those are guys that he has come across with in the league, where I don't think he would have an issue with maybe, you know, obviously giving the keys to the car to people like that.
Well, I think Jimmy Lake came in and ran what he wanted to run. I think that's why Raheem brought him. He's like, hey, this is a system we've ran. Run it your way. Run how you want it. And I think that's probably where the disconnect came, and where, you know, things weren't happening the way they should have. And then you get more involved, right? So I think you want someone that has a similar philosophy of you, because that's how you've built your team. Now, I know that Raheem's only been here 1 year, but you drafted how many defensive players last year? You brought them in to run a certain, because they fit what you want to do. So, you know, I would say bring someone in that has a similar mindset to you, and then you don't have to worry about it. It's proven. I think Ulbrich, I love Jeff Ulbrich. I was around Jeff Ulbrich quite a bit during his time here when he was the linebackers coach, and then for a little bit of the DC during the interim. Ulbrich's an amazing. What's the difference in Jeff Ulbrich and Robert Saleh? They both guys that have had top five defenses running. They've worked together a tremendous amount of time, and they have both at one point been the head of a team. Ulbrich was the interim. Yeah. So what's the difference?
I want to answer your question, but I think the question I'm trying to bring up is not like, do we want these guys? It's, do these guys want us? Like, that's the question I keep kicking back and forth in my head. Do these guys, the Jeff Ulbrich, the Steve Wilkes, really the star defensive candidates this, you know, this go around, are these guys going to want to come here and be a part of what the Falcons have going on? That's the question you have to ask yourself.
What the Falcons have going on?
We'd all love to have Steve Wilkes, Jeff Ulbrich, whoever else, Robert Saleh, whoever else.
I don't see why you wouldn't want to come here. You mentioned the rookie draft class before that. So we have some guys that you can shape, mold, will already be going into their sophomore season. You've got staples here like Jesse Bates now, and I call him a staple. It's been two seasons, right? But still, he's coming and cemented himself into this defense. I don't see why you wouldn't want to come here, especially given at least the kind of bright spot that we highlighted at different points during the season that this defense had.
I mean, I'm with you. Not only that, Tiff, but you have to imagine that the part of these – interviews will be, hey, what are y'all doing with that 15th pick? Like, what's the 15th pick going to be? Am I getting a first round pick out of this? Am I guaranteed that, you know, that I'm going to get to go out there and select a corner or an edge rusher or an interior guy or whatever else it may be? I have to think that's going to be part of the equation. But again, I'm with you. I think I see all the bright side of the Falcons thing. I will say, though, if you're looking from a perspective of how long are you going to be at a place, I think you do look at job security in the long term with what you're going. You have to fully believe in Raheem Morris and the longevity here with what you're doing, as opposed to going, you know, like I said, an offensive-minded head coach that's getting hired in year one that you know is going to be there two or three
years.
Yeah,
but the offense is set here.
No, I know. Like, that's not what I'm saying. No, I'm saying, like, if you were – if let's just say Clint Kubiak got hired in New Orleans, he's an offensive-minded head coach, and he calls Jeff Oberg and he goes, hey, I need you as my defensive coordinator – it seems like your longevity in that post is at least guaranteed for 2 or 3 years.
Is it, though?
If an offensive coordinator is getting a head coaching job. Not only that, but offensive coaches right now last longer than defensive coaches do in the NFL.
I think it's the NFL. I think you're not guaranteed another year anywhere.
Never.
I mean, we've seen coaches get fired. You know, Gerard Mayo was talked about like he was the second coming before he became the head coach, and he was given 1 year. So, and then I look on the other side is there's only 32 DC jobs. So you take them. I mean, you take them that you get a couple years of guaranteed money, you take it. I mean, it's, you're also a successful DC. And if you come here to Atlanta and you get 1 year and you're not, and say they don't draft what you want, most people are going to look at it. That guy was given a raw deal. Look what he did with the Jets defense.
But I made the point about the offense earlier is what I was getting at is the fact that the offense is set, right? So, and I say that meaning that you think Michael Penix has a really tremendous upside. You've got Bijan, you've got Drake London and him connecting really well, him with Penix. Wow, combining my words here. So the point I'm making is, okay, you think that the Falcons offense will be good, if not better, next season. So I would feel comfortable as a defensive guy coming in thinking, okay, I can get things really turned around here and I can collaborate with Coach Morris, who is a well-liked guy in this league.
That's a big key. I think the way that Raheem Morris is billed as a boss, because I think if you asked every single one of the guys they're going to interview, I think if you asked every single one of them, they would say they've probably worked for a boss that they didn't like. And that's just a thing. Like, that's been one of the conversations around Bill Belichick in this entire thing. I heard this was a conversation being had yesterday. He burned a lot of bridges around the NFL. And that's one of the reasons, I think, after looking all the way through it, that he decided to go the college football route, because he had burned a lot of bridges. So I think a lot of these coaches, especially the older guys that we're talking about, the guys that are in their late 40s or early 50s, they're like, dude, I ain't going to work for some taskmaster. Like, I'll go somewhere where I can – you know, have a little bit of fun, have a head coach that understands, you know, quality of life type things. And I think that's one thing that Raheem Morris definitely has in his category.
Yeah, absolutely. Raheem Morris has as good of a reputation around the NFL as anybody you'll find. I mean, you saw that when he was hired. You should have your pick. There's, you know, San Francisco is going to be Salah, essentially, basically from every report, is getting offered that job back. And I don't see him not taking it. There's a plenty of talent all over the defensive side over there, and you're going to work with Kyle Shanahan, who seems like these guys figured it out on the defensive side as far as getting players.
When we come back, we'll recap the wild card weekend that was in the NFL. Stay with us here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game is your home of the NFL playoffs. Join us for all the action of divisional round this Saturday and Sunday. Sports Radio 929 The Game is your home for the NFL on Westwood One, and brought to you by your Greater Atlanta Area McDonald's. Enjoy steak on any breakfast favorite. By Trajan Wealth, your trusted local fiduciary advisors. And by Prize Picks, run your game. And by Chattanooga Whiskey, the Tennessee way. All right, let's recap the wild card weekend that just passed us. The Texans beat the Chargers 32-12. C.J. Stroud now has won two playoff games. So from his rookie season to his now sophomore season.
Yeah, and his reward will be to go to Kansas City and play Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones, Travis, you know.
Feels like it's been 6 months since I've seen Patrick Mahomes play.
And he missed one game, right? He's only one game. Yeah. Well, that's because he played three games in 11 days or whatever.
I was going to say it's because they played the Christmas Day game.
Well, they
did. And then they played the one before that was like a big split.
It was like a Sunday, Saturday, Wednesday game.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Feels
or
like maybe it's just been few and far between.
Might have been Monday.
It also might be Saturday, because we were so oversaturated with him on national games for like the first half of the season. So
wasn't really a good game. The 4:30 kickoff on Saturday. You know, the Texans were really sloppy offensively. And defensively, Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley were phenomenal out there on the outside corners. The Ladd McConkey, the play Ladd McConkey makes, and what was that, like a post route where he just goes up and grabs, I mean, essentially Herbert put it up for grabs. He goes up and grabs it and then comes down and they can't get him on the ground and he just takes off. I mean, that was it. That was the entire day. If it's not Ladd McConkey, they have no receiving core in L.A.
I thought that Houston looked like the most well-coached defense that I've seen in a long time. Like, they were always in the right spot.
It reminded me of the San Francisco defense, D'Amico Ryan's last game there when they're in the playoffs and they played the Cowboys. Not last game, but one of his last games there when they played the Cowboys. And every time there was a play, like, there was anything that they were right there on it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's been special, and C.J. Stroud believes this is the start of something great.
Everything is really just coming together at the right time, and, you know, I really feel like this is the start, and I'm really just, you know, amazed of, you know, the environment in there as well, but I really believe that, you know, we're just getting started, and, you know, hopefully that, you know, we continue to get this momentum rolling.
Stroud, 22 of 33, 282 yards, one touchdown, one interception. But, you know, I worked in Houston during the time when J.J. Watt was there, so it is nice for this franchise to be on top, on top-ish, I should say, you know, maybe once again. And for him to be able to lead this team, you have a rookie. He had the rookie head coach last year with a rookie quarterback getting it done, and now they find a way to continue that as they try to. Yeah.
Yeah, not only that, Tiff, but you had the was Will Anderson rookie defense player
of
the year?
He was last year.
Yeah, so you had a young core all the way around from top to bottom, and they continue on that upward trajectory. I think you have a good point. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Moving on now to the other games that were also on Saturday. You had the Ravens beat the Steelers 28-14. And
they look like the best
team.
They
look like the best team.
I mean, it's honestly, it's terrifying when you look at the dynamic playmakers you have and you look at the fact that, you know, Zay Flowers is out and Rashad Bateman steps in, makes a couple big plays. But, I mean, I feel like, and this is not true, but it feels like it watching them, that they don't have to throw the ball if they don't want to. Like, that's what it feels like. It feels like you're watching old school, like, Army offense, but in a spread kind of way that they could run a number of different plays. Quarterback read counters. Derrick Henry is terrifying. I mean, it goes back to our conversation
absolutely
we had like a
terrifying
month or two ago of like, if you were going to meet aliens for the first time, like he's on the first ship. Like you're sending him and being like, yep, this is actually the pinnacle of what we look like.
And that's why I saw something maybe three quarters through the year when Philly was on that crazy win streak and they're like, see, Jalen Hurts, if he's anybody else, he'd be getting MVP considerations. And Jalen Hurts didn't have his best year. His best year was really, I think, the Super Bowl year. But you go look at Lamar. Lamar had his best year of his career, statistically speaking. And I'm not taking a thing away from it, but how much easier did it get for him when you finally had a run game that was from, you know, the running back was elite, right? I mean, not knocking J.K. Dobbins, who unfortunately could not stay healthy when he was in Baltimore. But Derrick Henry,
he's just different,
completely changed the offense in a way where it was so complete of an offense this year because of the addition of Derrick Henry. Because remember the first two or three years Lamar was there, they were a run-heavy offense, and Lamar was using a lot of that. That's how he works. That's that first MVP. Then you went and got Todd Monken to open up the passing game. And then you went and got Derrick Henry just to, like, turbo boost it, completely unlock it.
June. Yeah, no one more grateful to have Derrick Henry on that team than Lamar Jackson.
I believe it's just self-explanatory. That guy's just a workhorse. That guy, I don't know. I can't find the words to say, man. Like, I believe everyone sees it. Like, I can just hand the ball off. 10 yards, 20 yards, 30 yards, and I'm just chilling, you know. So now when they're attacking him, then I go, and it's like I'm fresh, you know, just making my job a lot easier. We just pick it back off of each other.
And it's been ridiculous because I think throughout that game, different stats would pop up, and I can't remember exactly where they were, but it was like first time in NFL history or first time since, I don't know, year 2000 that a running back has 100 rushing yards in a playoff game. It was just something ridiculous like that, all attached to Derrick Henry's name, who had 186 yards, two touchdowns. His longest run that he broke off in that game was 44 yards.
And do y'all, like, to Lamar's point, because I think he's spot on, like, you look at Lamar sometimes when he's handing the ball off and he's carrying out his face or whatever. It looks like for both of these guys, and I know it's not, trust me, but it looks like for them at times that it's easy. Like, it just looks like their, like, pulse is, like, you know, way down, like, their heart rate's not up. They're just like, oh, yeah, we're just going to, hey, you know what, I'll just get ahead of steam, fall forward, and gain 8 yards. Like, yeah, that's just what we do. It's like, dude, I know it's not easy, and you got to give credit to Todd Monken and everybody else, that offensive line, but, man, it just looks easy with those two guys in the backfield.
Couple more games to get to. I'll name this. I'll just write off the scores and then we can all give our thoughts. Bills beat the Broncos 31-7. Eagles beat the Packers 22-10. And the Commanders last night beat the Bucks 23-20. Do you want to start there?
With the Commanders game? Yeah, we haven't talked about it.
Man up Monday is going to be ugly. Man up.
Because what Jaden Daniels is doing with that team, with Dan Quinn, and this, he's. It doesn't look like a rookie that is playing out there.
What if I told you, doing this, Dan Quinn has won more games in a regular season than he ever has before as a coach. Because he won 12 games there. He never won more than 11 in the regular season with the Falcons. And now you turn around and he's won his first playoff game there. I think Dan Quinn is the perfect coach for what Washington needed, which was a complete reset. Kind of change at you're changing everything. They changed
everything.
A ton of players. How many players did they change on defense? You bring in a rookie quarterback. It just a complete culture change.
I know.
I hate it,
but that's
it
is. What it is.
It is, and that's not a knock on Ron Rivera during his time there. But Ron Rivera had to deal with basically the fallout from years of poor ownership and front office. In Washington, and now Dan Quinn's reaping the benefits of a complete reset.
I thought there was an interesting note on the broadcast last night, and I, for the life of me, can't remember who was calling the game last night.
It was Collinsworth and Tariq.
Okay. So I thought they made an interesting note, and there was a lot of talk about Austin Eckler being back involved. He missed four games with concussion-like symptoms, and then Austin Eckler, they basically essentially said during their interviews that they felt like that they didn't trust other players to do what Austin Eckler had been doing. And it's kind of why you saw Washington hit a little bit of a lull offensively, because Austin Eckler was not involved, and it was almost like it limited what they were trying to do with him back in the fold last night. It looked like they were able to pick up blitzes a little bit better, have outlet passes and everything else going on. So he definitely changes it. I've made the comment, like, Cliff Kingsbury, I think, deserves some credit, but Jaden Daniels deserves mostly all of it for that offense.
I agree with that.
And so that's the thing.
And quick stats for you. Three times in NFL history, a rookie QB has led his team to a game with zero turnovers and zero punts. All three games were started by Jaden Daniels, week two, week three, and then last night against Tampa Bay. So
he's special,
he is special.
Dan Quinn was extremely aggressive and they on fourth downs. And when he goes for it on the first one, I think it was Collinsworth said it. He goes, hey, we knew where he was going to do this. He basically told us, and I think it goes for a lot of NFL coaches, that whether he goes for it on fourth down or not, it's all predetermined by where they're at on the field, the down and distance, and what the situation is as far as, you know, maybe scoring the game. And they went for it multiple times. They didn't make it. They left points all over the field, but they ended up getting the win.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. Ohio State, Notre Dame in the college football championship game next week, and we've got a mic'd up. That's just ahead. We'll be right back here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game.
Pressure comes. Sawyer knocked it out and picks it up. Jack Sawyer headed down the sidelines. Ohio State scoop and score and dagger from 82 yards.
That was courtesy of ESPN, the Jack Sawyer scoop and score to lead Ohio State to the victory over Texas in the college football playoff. That game was on Friday night as they went on to win it 28-14. By the way, Sports Radio 929 The Game has college football national championship game covered all week long. Starting Saturday, we'll be broadcasting from the College Football Playoff Fan Fest at the Georgia World Congress Center. So you can come down to Hall A and be a part of our live show Saturday through Monday and listen live for special guests and a complete breakdown of the national championship game Saturday through Monday on Sports Radio 929 The Game.
It's interesting listening to that, Jack Sawyer. One of the things that popped up in my head was, I don't know if you guys saw the back and forth with Herb Street and Desmond Howard talking about this roster of the Ohio State Buckeyes. And one of the things that Herb Street, I really feel like, goes out of his way, and I know he gets hate from Ohio State fans for it, goes out of his way not to be an Ohio State guy or a homer. But you could tell that he kind of went in defense mode over this roster. And he's like, this is, they get this national, you know, kind of headline that it's a $20 million roster. And he was like, this is a veteran roster. They brought in a couple of guys, Caleb Downs, Will Howard, the Ole Miss running back. And they added some pieces for sure. But a lot of these guys, at least defensively, are veteran guys, that were not added in that role. So it almost sounded like Herb Street was a little bit defensive over some of this roster and some of the headlines that have been out there. Bottom line, and I love Herbie, but the bottom line is you did go out and spend $20 million to add some nice pieces that all happen to be really, really good. And not only that, Caleb Downs, your, what, $3 million safety, goes out and gets an interception at the end of the game with 2 minutes left. So,
how much are you paying for Jeremiah Smith, who is an all-world, freshman player? Igbuka is making money too. Look, I'm not going to take up for Desmond Howard because he drives me nuts sometimes with some of the homerism crap he comes with from Michigan and the Big Ten on top of it. But Kirk Herbstreit can't defend the fact that your head coach of your alma mater went up there and said, give me $20 million. That's what it takes to win a college football national championship.
That was last offseason, right? Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah. And that was
going into this year.
I think that was at a booster type meeting. And guess what? They gave him $20 million.
Right.
And he is playing for college football national championship. So Ryan Day, he held up his end of the bargain, but that is what college football is now. Don't run from it, Herbstreit. I mean, I don't like, don't try to hide from the fact that this is what college football is, and we're going to get into what college athletics is more in the life of Squid coming up at 8:40 with another college coach who over the weekend said, hey, if you don't do what I pay you to do, you're going to understand that you don't get to play anymore.
Yeah. And by the way, ding. I don't have a problem with Ohio State doing it. It's frustrating for, I think, a lot of people that don't have the Texas, Ohio State, Oregon money. And I know there's a lot of SEC programs that fit that bill, but this is the structure that's in place. They are taking advantage of the structure that is in place. Now, do I love it if you're going and, actively recruiting guys off of other rosters that are, not even in the portal? And, I know that happens in college sports today. No, I don't like that. But I think what Herbstreit was trying to say was when you listen to a name like Jack Sawyer that has been around and that has decided to return and probably paid money, but, signed on with Ohio State on the dotted line, out of high school, then you can't keep saying that these guys are just brought in off the street and they're just, a band of misfits that happen to be paid a lot of money. I think he was almost trying to safeguard against those guys being labeled as just mercenaries that have been moved into Ohio State and now they're in the national title game.
That's what college football is.
I agree.
I mean, that's my problem is you don't have to like the system to not hate who Ohio State is, right? Any team in the country has the chance to do what Ohio State has done. Whether you have the money or not is one thing. But any team, you have to have the money.
That's okay.
But guess what? If you want your team to do that and you're a powerful booster, then do that.
Every school is going to get them. I mean, I've sat in some meetings where coaches have talked about X school giving their players, they're all getting red pickup trucks and whatnot. Like, and people have asked questions about how can they compete with that? Like, not every school can be in this position because not every school is getting 20 million from boosters to go, you know, build up the roster.
But you can tell that the teams that have always done it are still doing it. The college football playoff, look at who the Final Four was. Penn State, Ohio State, Texas, Notre Dame. What are those? Those are blue bloods.
Yeah.
Tennessee was in the college football playoff. I mean, go through it. Oregon. Like, there's no
mistake. Those schools have money.
But that's what college football's always been, though. It's always been those that have and those that don't. There's no parity in this sport. There's never been parity in college football. That's why the same 20 schools have won all the national championships in the last 50 years.
And that's not me arguing with you.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I know. And I'm not trying to. Aimed at you.
Yeah, okay.
That's aimed at the people that think, well, there's parity. There is no such thing as parity. There's never been parity in college football.
Well, what's funny about it is the parity conversation came up a lot, specifically in the SEC. And what has happened is it's broken into two conversations. I think we're talking about parity in terms of the quarterback position. You're not going to have depth at the quarterback position, it doesn't feel like, because the second string guy that was a five-star recruit, if he's not the starter, he's going somewhere else, right? That's kind of what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
But at the other positions, there's not that much parity. Like you're simply, if you're a decent defense and you have a booster that's willing, I'll be interested to see some of the programs that do have big boosters but have not had the success. I'll be interested to see how much they climb here in the next few years before, you know, probably before rules are put into place, you know, they can safeguard against it. I'm talking about Oklahoma State. You know, teams like that,
yeah,
that have billionaire backers that have been mediocre for a long time.
Imagine if T. Boone Pickens was still alive.
That's my thing.
Like,
yeah,
the last outlier, Tiff, I can think of that won a national championship in college football, and maybe I'm just skipping over one, but the last outlier was it BYU in the 80s? I mean, other than that, now Miami wasn't a power when they won their first national title, but they were for years to come, and I don't think anyone's looking at that program, and I think there was a ton of money and other things swirling around it in the 80s.
I think we look, but to your point, I think you're right, but I also, I fit like the Clemsons of the world into that conversation. Because it's not a long, look, and there is an algorithm about what your signing classes have been, right? And this is all predates all this transfer portal NIL stuff, but there was always an algorithm on what your signing classes were and how well you could actually do. And they kind of broke that algorithm. They're like, they were not finishing with these number one recruiting classes and yet still going out and competing for national titles at a level they had not done in 40 or 50 years.
But even with Clemson, and I know that Dabo plays this toes this line, but what's the old saying? If I don't see it, it didn't happen or whatever. I mean, that's like there's still bag men all through it. I mean, that was what college sports as a whole was. That's why I have no issue with what Ryan Day did. Hey, we need $20 million to win. If you got and he knew they had it and he got
saying it. Saying the quiet part out loud.
Yeah. Well, because guess what? It's out in the open. So and I give Ryan Day, who I've been critical of, a lot of credit because he talked it and now he's backed it up.
Yeah, I agree. And look, he's in the national title game. Ohio State fans can rejoice, and they look like they're going to be favored in that game. So I don't think anybody can fault what he's able to do. Hey, I feel like I probably lost my man card over the weekend. I'm going to let you two guys judge me. Here's a mic'd up. Had an obviously crazy weekend. You look at the weather. You look at the snow. Hope everybody was able to get home safely. Bo and I ended the show. I threw the truck in a four-wheel drive. I actually had a family member in town. My cousin was in town for a conference. Threw him in the truck with me. We headed north. Didn't even try to get on 400 or 85 or any of that kind of stuff. We just straight up hit Peachtree to Roswell Road and rode that thing out. Saw about 20 to 25 cars probably that had been stuck along the way. And that was, well, when we left here, what was it, probably two hours into the powder falling down?
No. No.
I feel like it was like 7 o'clock it started just absolutely coming down.
It started snowing in our first commercial break
on
Friday morning.
There you go.
And I got to give shout out to the state, because when I jumped on,
good point.
When I jumped, I went a little bit around my normal route, and I got on right there at 16th on the 75 North. And when I jumped on, there were four trucks with the snow, with the scrapers going through. And I rode in that for a while until traffic got too heavy on that. I didn't like it, so I got out and did my own thing. But there were. The roads were way better.
Yeah, much more prepared than, you know, obviously years past storms and everything else. So I mentioned I had a cousin in town. We did end up heading to Publix, opened up around, I think, noon by my house. So I go, and there's nothing left in the meat section. Like, everything is completely gone. I heard Rusty, and we talked about
meat man.
Well, I was going to say, right. I was going to say, well, I don't know how I was going to get to his house. So, you know, I heard Rusty talking Thursday night to Dukes and Bell, and it was so funny. And he was like, man, I'm in Publix. I'm about to have to do an Oklahoma drill over some of this chicken in here, which I thought was hilarious. And when I showed up to Publix Friday, he was spot on. Not one piece of chicken or pork was left in there. So I'm looking over what I'm going to do, and I'm looking at some of the beef. I see a brisket flat, and I'm like, oh, I'll cook that. I kind of punked out.
No, don't do it. Don't say it.
I didn't. I was like looking out at the snow and the ice that was on my deck, and I was like, And I hate to admit this live on the air, but I was like, that crock pot seems like a better option right now. So I voted against the pit boss, the pellet smoker, the Weber with the snake method, everything else going on. I walked in there and cracked out the crock pot. And, you know,
say listen, it ain't so, Mike.
The
say it ain't so.
Old brisket down on the old crock pot,
man. It's
the first time I've ever done a brisket in a crock pot in my entire life. And I've been doing brisket for a long time.
Oh, you should be ashamed.
I know.
Oh.
Of who you
really
are,
good,
who you've turned into as
really
a human
being. I don't know if y'all are crock pot users. One of you.
Yeah. We use it all weekend.
I love my crock pot.
What did you do in the crock? Well, you're over here judging me. What did you cook in the crock pot?
Amy did a Mississippi pot roast.
He probably did.
And then I did chili.
You're going to blame it on Amy?
I put my, that was her. That was her thing. I put my, I cook. Chili's like the weirdest meal ever because you essentially cook it. Or you cook the ground beef.
Yes.
I cooked it in the Fireshire. By
good?
The way,
oh, it had to have been.
And I used those fire roasted Rotel.
Yeah.
Man, and I put a little more extra red pepper than I normally do.
A little more
and
extra.
And it had a little backlash kick, right? So you taste it, and all of a sudden you get the kickback. And it was phenomenal.
Okay.
But you make it, you do all the work, and then you throw it in a crock pot, and then it works for another 8 hours because that's how the chili gets its flavor because it just
melts together.
Oh,
God,
so
I'm hungry
good now.
Chili almond.
So you can do chili in a crock pot, but you cannot do.
You can't do a brisket in a crock pot.
Just such according,
this is all according to Bo Martin.
Bark, char,
no,
smoke ring, just.
So Bo just said you're not a real man.
My house smells good.
He just said you're not a real man. What's my rule?
Yeah. What's your ruling? Do you think I lose
my
man
ruling?
Card?
Oh, I don't want to really get in the middle of this.
Yeah, you do.
I don't really want to. Yeah.
I'll say it, Mike. You went soft. You went soft.
Coming from the Falcons fan that was decked out in Eagles gear yesterday.
Decked out? No, I was wearing no Eagles gear.
You were not wearing Kelly Green, dog. Please
no,
tell
I was
me.
Not. I was wearing black and red. I was wearing black and red.
No, you weren't.
I promise you I was. We
look,
can ask
gentlemen, we'll debate more about Mike's man status in the break, but we will be right back at the top of the hour. For these guys, I don't know if Mike can do it today, to man up. We'll find out. We'll see if that happens here.
Gotta reinstate my card.
We'll be right back on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game.